Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today, Ana Mateo brings us the health report. We also hear from Mario Ritter. And we close our show with the making of a nation. But first, this report from Alice Bryant and Pete Musto.
While Enrique Rico was growing up in Washington State, his mother cleaned the homes of people employed at Microsoft Corporation. On days when he was too sick for school, he joined his mother when she went to work. And soon, he would dream of having the life of a technology worker. Now, at age 26, Rico is creating computer software programs at Avvo, an online marketplace for legal services. Yet, he did not finish college, and he had no former experience in subjects like science, technology, engineering, or mathematics. However, Rico did complete a program called Apprenti. It provides education and on-the-job training for tech jobs to non-traditional trainees. I never really thought I could do it, but once I dug deep, I gave it my all, Rico told Reuters news agency. The Apprenti program is a project of the Washington Technology Industry Association with the United States Department of Labor. It operates at around 50 companies across the country. They include businesses such as Microsoft, Amazon, and JP Morgan Chase. In 2017, in Apprenti's first year, 76 candidates received training. The program is not easy. Candidates must complete about 400 to 780 classroom hours in just 12 weeks. After a year of on-the-job training, the program placed 330 Apprenti graduates at full-time jobs. The class of 2019 is expected to produce 700 graduates.
Tammy Thiemann works at Amazon. She told Reuters that the company is likely to accept up to 1,000 graduates in the next few years. Right now, it has 150. The tech industry had 2.8 million job openings last year. Half of them were middle-level jobs that do not require a college education. That information comes from Jennifer Carlson, executive director of Apprenti. Hiring in the technology industry is slow, however, because companies cannot find workers with the right training, she said. Apprenti offers most of its training to women, minority groups, and military veterans. It will choose its 700 candidates for 2019 from a group of 2,000. Amazon teamed up with Apprenti after its founder, Jeff Bezos, made a promise to hire 25,000 veterans and husbands and wives of armed forces members by 2021. But the program has quickly grown to find skilled workers for many kinds of open jobs. While veterans often have valuable skills, they usually do not have workplace experience. That is why the biggest barrier currently for veterans is being underemployed when they leave the armed forces, said Chris Newsom. He is with a company called Recruit Military. A lot of these men and women are able to find jobs, but not necessarily careers, Newsom said.
But even new university graduates often need to complete a program like Apprenti because computer languages change so quickly. Training at universities or community colleges also can be ineffective in preparing students for jobs which require special certification, Apprentice Carlson said. Even boot camps for computer programming are not always effective. Rico tried that path first, resigning from his $16.50 an hour job as a salesperson at an Apple store to go into a boot camp. But without a college education, he could not compete against other tech job seekers. For smaller companies like Avvo, Apprenti is more of a calling. The executives saw the value of a program that gets you talented engineers and does a social good, said Hunter Davis of Avvo. The company currently has about 25 to 30 software developers, with about 15% of them coming through Apprenti. The training helps Apprenti graduates right away. Like Rico, many of them had worked low-paying jobs, earning about $28,000 a year. The starting salary in the Apprenti program is $45,000 during training. At 6 months, when candidates begin on-the-job training, the pay rises to $51,000 a year. If they get hired full-time, and almost all of them do, Apprenti graduates can earn at least $75,000. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Pete Musto.
A device called a tree talker is providing information about trees to people who oversee forests and woodlands. The device aims to measure the growth and general health of trees. Scientists say the new technology is important because trees are believed to be under increasing stress because of changes in the world's climate. Scientists say forests are important because they absorb or take in carbon dioxide. It is one of the gases released by burning oil and other fossil fuels. Studies show that carbon dioxide is a heat-trapping gas. It has been linked to a general warming in the Earth's atmosphere. Antonio Brunori is Secretary General of PEFC Italy. PEFC is short for the Program for the Endorsement of Forest Certification. The organization says it works to support good methods for overseeing and developing forest resources. Brunori says the world is at a historic period for climate change because the scientific world is on guard. He added that many scientists say, "Be careful. The ecosystem of the forests is not able anymore, as it was before, to absorb all this carbon dioxide." Rising temperatures, Brunori noted, are placing forests under increased stress. He said that harmful insects and diseases are becoming more of a threat to trees. This is bad for the environment, but also bad for the timber industry. The tree talker devices serve as an early warning system for people overseeing forests. Brunori said Tree Talker turns eco-physiological signals, such as growth, absorption of carbon dioxide, liquid flow from roots to leaves, into scientific information. This information can help show if a tree is under attack from insects or other organisms. The Tree Talker sends its information to forest managers. Riccardo Valentini invented the new device. He also is head of the Euro-Mediterranean Center on Climate Change. The Tree Talker device transmits data via radio, and it can transmit data, actually, a very long distance, up to 1 kilometer, Valentini said. The information lets forestry officials take action immediately to control threats. The Tree Talker is able to measure the width of the bottom of a tree. Timber industry workers can use this information to know how much wood they are growing compared to how much they are harvesting. Another goal is to give scientists the information they need to understand how climate affects forests and the part trees play in a healthy environment. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. When it comes to having a healthy body, seeing may be believing. Experiments suggest that people who see detailed pictures of their clogged arteries may be more likely to stay healthy than people who do not. The latest experiment was done in Sweden. Researchers there studied just over 3,500 people. These individuals were between 40 and 60 years of age. Each person had at least one risk factor for heart disease, but no signs of the disorder. The researchers divided these subjects into two groups. One group received what was called usual care, like taking medicine or talking with healthcare workers about heart disease. However, the members of the other group got to see pictures of their arteries. Researchers also gave them personalized guidance on why those pictures might be a sign of future health problems. 1 year later, the people who saw the images of their own arteries had fewer risk factors for heart disease than those who did not see pictures. The researchers reported their findings in The Lancet. The lead writer of a report on the study was Ulf Naslund of Umeå University. In an email to the Reuters news agency, he explained that the best way to keep your arteries healthy is to follow a healthy lifestyle. He said that means do not smoke, drink less alcohol, eat healthy food, exercise, and take the right medications to lower cholesterol and high blood pressure. There are plenty of treatments, Naslund noted. That is not the problem. The problem, he said, is that people do not take steps to improve their condition or take their medicines. That is where the seeing part may help. Doctors warn that many people think they have healthy hearts, but actually they do not. Each year around the world, about 17.9 million people die from some form of cardiovascular disease.
That is 31% of all deaths worldwide. These numbers come from the World Health Organization. Cardiovascular diseases are disorders of the heart and blood vessels. The WHO website published this advice about heart health. Tobacco use, an unhealthy diet, and physical inactivity increase the risk of heart attacks and strokes. Exercising for at least 30 minutes every day will help to prevent heart attacks and strokes. Eating at least 5 servings of fruit and vegetables a day and limiting your salt intake to less than 1 teaspoon a day also helps to prevent heart attacks and strokes. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. James Buchanan of Pennsylvania won the presidential election of 1856. He defeated John Fremont, the candidate of the newly created Republican Party, which opposed slavery. Buchanan, a Democrat, had often supported the South in the dispute over slavery. Most of the new president's closest friends were Southerners. He wrote that the North was too aggressive toward the South and should stop interfering in the slave states. Buchanan said the South had good reason to leave the Union if abolitionists continued their attacks against slavery. Jack Moyles and Stan Busby tell more about James Buchanan, and they discuss his influence in the Supreme Court ruling in the case of a slave from Missouri named Dred Scott.
As the new president, Buchanan believed he could solve the slave question by keeping the abolitionists quiet. Success would mean the end of the anti-slavery Republican Party. In choosing his cabinet, Buchanan wanted men who shared the same ideas and interests. President Pierce had tried to unite the different groups in the party by giving each a representative in his cabinet. This had not worked. It had driven the different party groups farther apart. Buchanan had served in President Polk's cabinet. He remembered how well its members worked together. He said it was the unity of this cabinet that made Polk's administration so successful.
Buchanan gave the job of Secretary of State to Lewis Cass of Michigan. Cass was 75 years old. His mind had lost its sharpness. This did not worry Buchanan, because he had planned to be his own foreign minister. The job of Treasury Secretary went to Howell Cobb, a Southern moderate from Georgia. Southerners also were named as Secretary of War, Interior Secretary, and Postmaster General. Isaac Tousey of Connecticut was given the job of Navy Secretary. Tousey was a Northerner, but he supported many policies of the South. Another Northerner, Jeremiah Black of Pennsylvania, became Attorney General. In forming his cabinet, Buchanan did not ask for advice from Senator Douglas of Illinois. Douglas was the party's leader in the Senate and the most powerful Democrat in the Northwest. Douglas believed that the Northwest should have 2 representatives in the cabinet. He said Cass could be one of them. But Douglas wanted one of his own supporters to be the other. Buchanan refused what Douglas wanted, and he gave the administration's support to a political enemy of Douglas.
James Buchanan was sworn in as president on March 4, 1857. In his inaugural speech, the new president denounced the long dispute over slavery. He said he hoped it would end soon. Buchanan said the dispute could be settled easily by doing two things: by ending interference with slavery in states where it was legal, and by letting the people of a territory decide if they wanted slavery. Buchanan said he expected the Supreme Court to rule soon on the right of the people of a territory to decide this. He said he was sure that all good citizens, North and South, would accept the High Court's ruling.
At the time he said this, Buchanan already knew what the court's decision would be. He had even used his influence to help one member of the court to decide. The decision was made in the case of Dred Scott, a Negro slave. Scott was sold in Missouri to an army doctor who took him to Illinois and then went into the Wisconsin Territory. Scott lived in these two places for almost 4 years before he was returned to Missouri. Scott asked a court in Missouri to give him his freedom. He claimed that living in Illinois and Wisconsin, where slavery was illegal, had made him a free man.
The court agreed with Scott and gave him his freedom. But the decision was appealed, and the Supreme Court of Missouri ruled against him. Scott then took his case to a federal court. Finally, he asked the United States Supreme Court to decide if he was a slave or a free man. The Supreme Court took up the case in December 1856. The judges studied it carefully because it raised serious constitutional questions. Scott claimed he was free because he had lived in free territory. It was free because Congress, in the Missouri Compromise of 1820, made slavery illegal in that area. Scott's owner raised the question, did Congress have the constitutional power to close a territory to slavery? Was the Missouri Compromise legal?
At first, most of the 9 Supreme Court judges had planned to give a decision without answering this question. They did not want to involve the court in this bitter dispute. The majority decided that a Negro was not a citizen. Therefore, they said, Dred Scott had no right to ask the court to hear his case. In this way, the case could be settled without deciding on the power of Congress to act on slavery in the territories. But 2 of the 9 Supreme Court judges opposed this ruling. Both were from the North. They had said they would write a minority decision. They said their decision would include a statement that Congress did have power over slavery in the territories.
Since 2 members of the court had planned to offer views on this question, the other 7 decided the majority also should do so. Of the 7, 5 were from the South. They did not believe Congress had any power over territorial slavery. The remaining 2 judges, both from the North, did not want to make what they felt would be a political decision. 1 Southern member of the Supreme Court was James Catron, a good friend of James Buchanan. Buchanan had written to him asking when the court would act on the Dred Scott case.
Catron had answered that the court would rule soon. Then he asked for Buchanan's help in getting one of the northern members of the court to vote with the five from the south. He told the president that the country would more easily accept the court's ruling if one of the northern judges gave his support. Catron proposed that Buchanan write to Justice Robert Greer of Pennsylvania. So Buchanan wrote to Greer. He told him that a strong decision in the Dred Scott case might do much to bring peace to the country. Greer agreed. He said he would vote with the five Southerners. They would rule that the Constitution did not give Congress power over slavery in the territories. All this had happened in the few weeks before Buchanan became president.
The Supreme Court finally announced its decision just 2 days after Buchanan moved into the White House. Chief Justice Roger Taney read the decision in the small courtroom in the Capitol building. The room was crowded with congressmen, senators, government officials, and newspapermen. Chief Justice Taney began reading the decision at 11 o'clock. He read for more than 2.5 hours. He said the High Court rejected Scott's claim of freedom for 3 reasons. First, Scott was not a citizen. Taney said the Constitution gave the right of citizenship only to members of the white race. Because he was not a citizen, he had no right to ask the court to hear his case. Secondly, Taney said Scott was ruled by the laws of Missouri, the state in which he lived. Missouri laws did not give freedom to slaves who lived temporarily in free territory. Therefore, said Taney, Scott was still a slave.
Then the Chief Justice took up the question of the free territory in which Scott had lived. It had become free territory under the Missouri Compromise. This was the law that Congress passed in 1820. This law kept slavery out of the northern part of the territory, which the United States bought from France. Justice Taney said Congress did not have the constitutional power to pass such a law. He said when new territory was won, it belonged to all citizens. He said Congress had the right to govern such territory until it became a state. But, he said, Congress did not have power to close new territory to any American citizen. He said the citizen from Georgia had as much right to settle in this territory with his slaves as a citizen of Maine with his horse. Taney said there was no word in the Constitution that gave Congress greater power over slave property than over any other kind of property. The only such power Congress held was the power to guard and protect the rights of the property owner. To close territory to slaves, Taney said, violated the constitutional rights of slaveholding citizens. Therefore, the Missouri Compromise was unconstitutional. Congress did not have power to act on slavery in the territories.
And that's our show for today. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver.